favorite hymns. Okay, you can go ahead and start the slides, hopefully. I understand the automatic thing to advance them is not working, so I'll just kind of try to remember to say hit the next one. The talk today is called Living in a World of Wonders, Seeing with the Eyes of the Poet, the Artist, and the Child. So I want to begin with this. Let's do a little thought experiment. Imagine if there was only one red rose in the whole entire world. Only one. One lovely, fragrant unfolding of scarlet beauty. I mean, honestly, wouldn't it be considered, if there was just one, as one of the world's greatest treasures? Wouldn't it be exhibited at the world's finest museums, where patrons would line up around the block to get a glimpse of this startlingly beautiful sight? Wouldn't they marvel at its exquisite form, its lovely scent, its deep coloration, its rare perfection? Yet I'd like to suggest our world is filled with such wonders. From the fragile architecture of a single snowflake to the ever-shifting colors in the evening sky. From the shimmering feathers of a hummingbird to the sleek splendor of a jungle cat. From the Grand Canyon to the far-flung galaxies. And our response to such things, I think, is one of the things that seems to set us apart from the animal kingdom. I marvel at the delicate beauty of the rose. My dog pees on the rose bush. Yet oftentimes, I'm not that much more appreciative than my dog. Right? Often, I fail to really pay attention to the beauty and wonder of the world around me. But that's not how it was meant to be. Think back to when you were a child. Think back to the way you experienced the world in your very earliest days. As a child, we saw everything with immediacy, with fresh vision, with open-heartedness, with enthusiasm and curiosity, with fascination. It didn't take much to keep us interested and aware. When I would go to visit my grandmother as a young child, I was always excited about all the toys that she kept in a special toy box. But really, what I enjoyed even more than those toys was when she'd make sandwiches out of white bread, bologna, and Velveeta cheese slices. They don't sound to me that good to me now, but it wasn't so much the sandwich itself, it's what we would do with the sandwich. Yeah, we'd take a few bites and eat a little bit of it, but then we'd go out in the backyard with our little lunch, and there on the back porch, there was evidently a little nest of black ants that lived somewhere nearby. And I loved to watch those ants scurry around hurriedly, seeming to be in a really big rush to get absolutely nowhere in particular. And Grandma and I would tear off little pieces of our sandwiches, and we'd set them in the path of the ants. And we'd marvel at how industrious these little ants were at gathering up these small chunks of food, sometimes much larger than the ants themselves. Sometimes two or three would gather together and haul away this kind of awful little sandwich that obviously was a real treat to them. And sometimes I would squat down so that I could watch more closely, utterly intrigued by these little creatures with their multiple legs and their twitchy little antennae. And it was not unusual for me to be entranced for a very long time at their industry, and the way they work together to gather those little bits of food. When I was older, I thought about this, and I understood why Solomon suggested in Proverbs 6:6 the contemplation of the anthill as a very useful undertaking. Well, these days, I don't generally spend much time watching ants. And I'm quite sure that my life is the poorer for it. A child takes note of such things, but we adults kind of tend to pay little attention. As we go older, we tend to lose touch with this way of thinking. We lose touch with the way we, as a child, found wonder in all of the world around us. Most of us tend to lose that childhood perspective that we once had. When we see something that should fill us with wonder, that may not be our response. Instead, we go through our lives with our senses numbed. As we grow older, we tend to become dulled in our senses. We will respond with, Or we lose our excitement about life. We become indifferent. We say to ourselves, so what? We become cynical. We lose our innocence. We're too sophisticated to waste our time with what we consider to be trivial things. We become world-weary. We become too exhausted, too busy, too worried about all our responsibilities to notice what's going on around us, except for at the very surface level. We become complacent. I've seen it. We aren't very open to being surprised by the new and the unfamiliar. So it's kind of like we go, so what? Yeah, right. Whatever. Seen it. Or we become just jaded. Yawn. We lose sight so easily of the magic and the mystery of the world around us that God created. We no longer experience life in a way that keeps our heart and our spirit open to wonder. But God doesn't want us to lose that childlike sense of wonder, that sense of noticing all the beauty around us that is what gives poets their wonderful artistic thing to do. Remember what Jesus told his disciples. I'm telling you, this is from the Message, I'm telling you once and for all that unless you return to square one and start over like children, you're not going to get a look at the kingdom, let alone get in. Whoever becomes simple and elemental again, like this child, will rank high in God's kingdom. Well, the Bible is filled with verses that reflect such a wondrous, childlike way of seeing. Let's look at just a few. Here's from Psalm 19, verses 1 through 4. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the works of his hands. Day after day, they pour forth speech. Night after night, they reveal knowledge. They have no speech. They use no words. No sound is heard from them. Yet their voice goes out into all the earth. Their words to the end of the earth. Notice that the psalmist is telling us that the beauty and majesty of the natural world has something important to tell us, something to reveal to us. And though it isn't using actual words like we humans would use, it's communicating something of God's glory to us. If we're listening, if we're paying attention. Here's another couple verses from Psalm 65, verse 8. The whole earth is filled with awe at your wonders. When morning dawns, where evening fades, you call forth songs of joy. Or Job, when God says to Job, listen to this, Job, stop. And consider God's wonders. The whole of creation is for the psalmist a chorus of praise. And we're called to pay attention to the wonders that God has liberally spread throughout the world he has given us. We should not just pass them by. We should stop and take them in. If we do, we'll begin to see the world in a new way. From Isaiah 55:12, "You go out in joy and be led in peace. The mountains and the hills will burst into song before you, and all the trees of the field will clap their hands." Isaiah is talking about nothing less than a different way of perceiving the world, one that is poetic and bursting with a creative vision. He goes so far, in fact, here as to anthropomorphize the natural world. I love that thought of the trees, their branches coming together and clapping. It's like some old Walt Disney, scene from an old Walt Disney movie or something. Yes, the poets, the children can remind us of a different way of seeing, the way of wonder, the way of living in a world of wonders. In his wonderful book, Orthodoxy, G.K. Chesterton captures this way of seeing so very beautifully. "Because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, 'Do it again.' And the grown-up person does it again until he is nearly dead." We've all probably experienced that with kids. "For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. But perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, 'Do it again,' to the sun. And every evening, 'Do it again,' to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never got tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite of infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we." Isn't that beautiful? Chesterton, I think, is suggesting a way of experiencing the world that is much like that of the child or the poet, one whose heart is open to all the wonders around them. We can learn something from children. We can learn something from the poets. They can teach us a new way of seeing, a way that invites wonder into our lives, and by doing so, feeds our heart and feeds our spirit. So I'd like to explore what wonder is and what benefit it can bring to both your spiritual life and to your creative life, and how it can make more room in your life for its transformative impact. So here's the question. What do we mean by wonder? It's a word we use a lot, right? And it's a word that shows up in a lot of our Christmas songs. But what do we really mean? What do we experience when we experience wonder? Well, I'd like to suggest an answer to that. I'd like to suggest that wonder begins in our senses, comes alive in our imagination, and then flourishes in our adoration of God. Wonder begins with what we experience through the senses, what we see, what we hear, what we smell and touch and taste. Our senses take in the beauty, luxuriate in it, and then our imagination opens up its significance for us. That isn't just something beautiful, but it has meaning. C.S. Lewis famously wrote, "Reason is the natural organ of truth, but imagination is the organ of meaning." In other words, imagination leads us toward the discovery of the deeper meanings and the more profound significance of what we see and experience. And then we're left in a state of wonder, a state of awe, a state of reverence. The beauty takes us outside of ourselves and invites us into communion with it. Wonder awakens our senses and our sense of awe, because with wonder comes the sense that there is something more, something behind and beyond our sensory experiences. Wonder is ultimately, I think, a pointer toward the divine creator who's hidden in it and revealed by it in the world that surrounds us. The God who is both immanent, seen in his creation, and transcendent, never limited by the earthly sphere. So our ultimate response to wonder is the feeling of awe. And awe leads us naturally to the response of worship. Next, I'd like to suggest that wonder is a response of astonishment, of admiration, and reverence. Note the progression I'm suggesting. First, wonder arrives at a bit of astonishment, something out of the ordinary, something that catches our attention, something that maybe causes our jaw to drop, as it were. So we notice it, we admire it, we take it in, we allow ourselves to fully experience it. Then it will almost certainly provide and provoke a sense of reverence within our hearts. Even someone who doesn't believe in God will likely find themselves from time to time feeling some sense of awe, even though they don't really know how to account for it or where to address the gratitude that they might feel as a result of it. That's why the beauty of the natural world or the products of human creativity can sometimes so effectively crack open the door just enough for the first flutterings of faith to arise in someone's heart, in someone's mind. Wonder can sometimes evoke a response in a way that a rational argument never could. For many, the experience of wonder is really the first step on the path of faith. And then, wonder is the place where our words fail. What I like to call Grand Canyon theology. Wonder is the response that arises because we do not live in a dead world of facts and data, but a world alive with mystery and things that we just actually can't explain. We live in a world haunted by realities from another realm that exists beyond and above us. Wonder is an experience that is beyond the purely rational. No matter how hard we try to explain our experience of wonderment, our worlds will ultimately fail us. We just can't find the words we need to fully express what we might feel. This is what I call Grand Canyon theology. Why do I call it that? Well, I can give you, are you ready for this? The facts about the Grand Canyon. Here are a few facts. It covers 1,904 square miles. Its depth is about 1 mile, and it's 277 miles long. And it can be described as a multicolored canyon created millennia ago, carved out of time by the Colorado River. There you go. Great. You have the facts. In fact, I can even provide you with a picture of it. That probably helps you gain a little bit better understanding. But honestly, and I'm speaking here from experience, unless you've ever stood at the very edge of the Grand Canyon and looked in both directions, then stared down into its depths, you don't really understand what the Grand Canyon is really all about. How many have seen the Grand Canyon in person? Do you agree with me? It's like there are no words for it. For words are inadequate in the face of such majestic beauty, just as they will often be when we try to really describe our experience with God. The life of faith is not primarily about comprehending the intricacies of theology or making sure that all your doctrinal affirmations are in order. It's not about agreeing with what someone else has figured out on your behalf. It's about your experience of something, someone bigger than you. Wonder takes us to that precipice where we experience God in ways which words are inadequate to capture. We're invited to let wonder lead us to stand at the very edge with God so that we can more fully know Him, not just know about Him. Wonder reminds us that we don't always have to understand or be able to explain, that sometimes we can just accept the experiences that we have as a gift from our loving Father. Even when you can't fully capture it in words, your heart, as Pascal tells us, knows things that your reason will never comprehend. So, it's always good in a sermon to be practical. We have waxed eloquently, or as eloquently as I am capable of, about wonder. But how can we open ourselves to more experience of wonder in our lives? Well, I'd like to get practical and make some suggestions about how we can prepare ourselves for an experience with wonder, how we can be a little more like that child or like that poet who sees the beauty for what it is. First of all, we have to stay awake. We need to wake up. Our brain, it's interesting, our brain puts a lot of energy into filtering out much of the stimulus that's going on around us. And this is a necessary biological process. I'm not knocking it. If we're to stay sane, We simply cannot deal with all the various stimuli that are constantly flooding into our senses at any one moment. It's just too much. So our brain filters out most of it. The background noise, the buzzing of the lights, the gush of the heater, the flow of traffic outside. Our brain helps filter those things out so that you can pay attention to me. But the problem is, I think that sometimes our brain filters out too much. We stop being aware of much that is going on around us. We can end up stumbling through life with our senses mostly asleep. We fail to really see and hear what's right in front of our eyes. We can end up living like sleepwalkers, missing so much of what is right in our faces, the beauty, the mystery, the holiness, and all the spiritual lessons that God has to offer us. We all need from time to time to be reawakened so that the glory doesn't just pass us by. Becoming awake means learning to open our eyes, open our ears, and open our hearts. And one of the things that creative people do with their art, which is so valuable, is they help people wake up and start to pay attention. Sometimes artists help us see things we might otherwise miss. In a sense, artists put a frame around the things we want others to give attention to. Secondly, we have to stay attentive. As you become awake to what's around you, you can do a better job of starting to pay attention. You'll be more able to tune into the world around you. You'll widen the periphery of your vision so that you can take in more of the world. You'll be better equipped to take note of the wonder, all the wonders that surround us. One of the goals, I think, for all of us should be to become more open to seeing the sacred realities that glimmer at the boundaries of our everyday experience. We need, I think, to be open to epiphanies. For those moments when eternity shines through the cracks of our daily existence. Just as the disciples learned on the road to Emmaus, we may find that Jesus will show up kind of almost incognito in some of the wonders and reveal himself to us in very unexpected ways. Suddenly, there will be a moment of revelation in the midst of the mundane. But this probably won't happen if we aren't attentive to the wonder that surrounds us. A friend recently shared with me the delight she found in standing in her backyard and listening to the chorus of birds, all the different species, each with their own melody, all joining together in a chorus unmatched by the work of even the greatest composer. This symphony of birdsong was her reward for being attentive to the world around her. As the great spiritual writer William Law once wrote, "All the world preaches to an attentive mind, and if you have ears to hear, almost everything you meet teaches you some lesson of wisdom." Sometimes the only proper response to the wonders we experience in the world is to let out a gasp of surprise and recognition and appreciation. As the novelist Barbara Kingsolver writes of her own upbringing and how it fed her artistry, she wrote, "A great many people will live out their days without seeing such sights, or if they do, never gasping. My parents taught me this, to gasp and feel lucky. That gave me the gift of making mountains out of nature's molehills." So if you're a person of faith, you'll find reasons to gasp around every corner. St. Brennan suggested that, quote, "If you become Christ's, you will stumble upon wonder after wonder, and every one of them is true." This kind of attentiveness is something we should look for. The greatest poets are those with the greatest eye for noticing the details that surround us. I think this is true for visual artists as well. All of these things trigger our sense of wonder. And then, third out of four, you stay humble. You don't really have to figure everything out. You don't really have to be able to answer every question. It's okay sometimes that you just stand humbly in awe of an amazing existence given to you by an amazing God. In fact, sometimes an overly rationalistic approach to our world can cause you to miss its wonders and mysteries. And if that's a temptation for you, try learning to just experience the world without immediately feeling the need to explain, categorize, label, judge, evaluate, and seek to control. Instead, seek out a childlike sense of openness and vulnerability. Let your heart become more receptive. So let your heart lead you as you stand humbly before life's mysteries. For if you do, in these mysteries, you will encounter the God of wonders. Once again, a quote from the wonderful G.K. Chesterton. He says, "One of the deepest and strangest of all human moods is the mood which suddenly strikes us, perhaps in a garden at night or deep in sloping meadows, the feeling that every flower and leaf has just uttered something stupendously direct and important, and that we have, by a prodigy of imbecility, not heard or understood it. There is a certain poetic value, and that a genuine one, in this sense of having missed the full meaning of things. There is beauty, not only in wisdom, but in this dazed and dramatic ignorance." I love that idea, the dazed and dramatic ignorance. Sometimes that's exactly what we need. As we use such an approach, we'll learn to see the holy in the ordinary things, and we'll be better able to help others see it too. Fourth and final point, stay open to seeing God's glory all around you. We might normally think of experiencing wonder as something that comes via majestic landscapes or sumptuous music or cavernous grandeur of a cathedral. But if we have eyes and ears open for wonder, we may discover it in the most mundane and ordinary places, like in the eyes of a child. For if we have our eyes and ears open for wonder, and if we're paying attention, there's holiness to be found in the most unexpected places. In ancient times, people tended to see the divine in everything. They saw a world full of gods and goddesses. They lived in what some have called an enchanted world. And I'm not suggesting that we go back to that exactly. But while most of us today probably are not seeing the world like that, I wonder if we've drifted too far in the other direction. With all our rationality and all our busyness, we've drained the world of that sense of the supernatural and the holy and the majestic and the mysterious. We might say that our modern world has become disenchanted. We're all about rational explanations that kind of explain away everything that's wondrous. And I think one of the callings for Christians today is to help people begin a journey toward faith by reawakening their sense of our incarnational God. That God who, as I said when I was talking with the kids, has left his fingerprints over all of creation. If we have eyes to see, we can capture glimpses of him all around us. There is something fresh and alive and amazing that we dare not overlook. As the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins celebrated in one of his poems, there lives the dearest freshness deep down things. So, in this Christmas season, which is a time when the world seems more open than usual to spiritual realities, consider making it your goal to look for God at work all around you. Open your heart and mind to seeing glimpses of his glory, even in the midst of all the marketing and glitter and glitz of a consumer holiday season. Instead, let this holiday be a succession of holy days. That's what a holiday is, a holy day. Let this one be a holiday, a succession of holy days for you to keep yourself open to seeing God at work in the mundane, the ordinary, and the overlooked normality of your life. Pursue the wonder that surrounds you every day. Don't sleepwalk through your life. Pay attention. Embrace the glimpses of wonder that you might find every day in the beauty of the natural world, in a song or a poem or a piece of art or the laugh of a child or the smile of an elderly friend or in a moment given to prayer or an act of love. God can be glimpsed at work among us. Let's not pass up the opportunity for that experience of wonder to turn your heart toward praise and worship. And so, would you join me in singing a song that talks about this way of living our lives?
Please stand.